Well, in October 2016, five activists with the moniker the Valve Turners briefly shut down 15% of America's oil supply by cutting pipes along the U.S.-Canadian border. Their action was to call attention to climate change. The Valve Turners called the pipeline companies to alert them, live-streamed shutoffs, and peacefully awaited their arrests in Minnesota, Washington, North Dakota, and Montana before shutting off the valves. There have been a number of trials and hearings of cases against the activists in the four states, and several trials are underway. A judge in Minnesota made the historically unprecedented move to allow defendants to use the necessity clause to argue that their action is a reasonable response to addressing climate change. So, Mike, let's talk about the necessity defense a bit on the history and how to meet the bar, which is very high in legal situations, and also it has a pretty scattered history in terms of activism.
It's a pretty glorious history, actually. It was used in the early 18th century by Peter Zenger, who deliberately published something that was against the law and got a jury verdict of innocence, not despite the fact that it was clearly against the law at the time. And it led pretty directly to the First Amendment and the freedom of the press. And John Brown used a defense against the charges of having killed and initiated this big military attack in Harper's Ferry, Virginia, by pleading the elements of what today is a necessity defense, saying everything else had been tried. Slavery had been approached with, legislators had been approached with petitions, one of them a series of signatures, a third of a mile long against it. Everything shy of bloodshed had been tried. And more recently, in the Vietnam War, and then again in the 1980s, people, for example, in 1987, in an attack against the Contras in Nicaragua and the CIA, there was people were charged with disorderly conduct and trespass during a demonstration against the CIA. They put on evidence. Witnesses described assassinations, murders, campaigns of misinformation, and ultimately all defendants were acquitted.
Now, part of the strategy of the necessity defense is to acknowledge guilt. There's not a dispute about what you've done, but the reasoning behind it, and the likelihood that your action will result in something defensible. Can you explain how you acknowledge and admit guilt on one level, but also push for a jury trial, because the jury trial is where the real drama is and where arguments can be made that have political play?
Well, in 1987, the defendants didn't deny that they committed trespass and they were disorderly by the standards, but they said there's essentially no other way. There's a real necessity to do this. And
would that then be taken into account in sentencing, or can you?
No, it's a defense. Like you plead manslaughter, you plead self-defense. True, I admit I shot and killed this person, but they were coming straight at me and they had a big knife, and therefore I'm excused.
So it's not with the insanity plea or many pleas; it's to avoid a jury trial.
Well, these people want
but
a jury
with this,
trial.
Right. So yeah. The strategy has to involve some refusal to accept some of the charges. Is that correct?
Well, they don't accept, they don't deny committing the acts. Like the Valve Turners did indeed cut the pipes, but they say it was justified. Like my
innocent
murder.
By reason of morality and necessity.
Well, or just pure self-preservation. It's not necessarily, it's not strictly a moral issue. It has to do with preservation, for example, of the planet. That's what the Valve Turners are arguing.
Now, one of the examples from the right-wing use of this has been the abortion threats of murdering doctors and what was called the Nuremberg strategy, that these are abortion doctors are are committing a genocide, and so to kill them say serves this larger good. In this case, though, these were threats or actual murder of people. It seems that there is always this question of the harms committed. And here, there, I know with the valve turners, there was quite an effort to warn, to make sure no one was harmed, to warn the companies that they were going to be turning off the valves. How important is that in the use of the necessity defense, that you've been very attentive to not harming people?
Well, of course, it improves your odds. And I think it's appropriate for climate issues. They're trying desperately to get past the judges and to get to a jury. Judges essentially don't like jurors. They regard jury trials as a way of slowing down their calendar as the general pain. But if you can...
Probably some truth to that, but...
Yeah, it's not efficient at all. It never has been. But the only way you can get a real sort of conflict with people's lives on the line is to have a jury trial and have people show up and talk about it and have a jury verdict. And you can lose big. That's what makes it interesting. And you can also win if you prevail. Then that's an outcome that reverberates, as trials did during the Vietnam War. There were trials of people for protesting who undisputedly violated laws about private property and destruction of this and that, but they were nonetheless found innocent in trials in Florida, and these had an impact. They reflected a truth that people were generally tired of the war, did not like the war, and it was a way of making that crystal clear. Beyond any sort of propaganda from either side, this is what the people think about these actions. So,
and that the valve turners themselves have talked about the daunting legal challenges and the elaborate legal side of the reasoning involved, but have also pointed out that at the end of the day, there is this way in which you're talking about persuading people of your cause. And so, and I think the fact that it has fared so differently in different states suggests that people are, it's not just a matter of working through the requirements of the law, but whether people think, you know, there's something here that's important going on.
Right. And they wisely spread their bets. They made four actions in four states. Some of the people are going to suffer. Some of the people are going to do real time, spend maybe more than a year in jail. Others, like in Minnesota, they're going to actually succeed in getting a trial and calling witnesses, calling people like Jim Hansen and, well, you know, William McKibben, some of the most famous China, you know, climate activists alive will appear, and they'll be able to try to put some flesh on the bones of this relatively abstract climate change argument and show how it's not really abstract. It has concrete effects now and in the future. You know, the problem is showing that there's imminent danger. John Brown could say, every day that we wait, the slaves are being lashed, blood, and being killed.
So what about the race and class aspects of this, taking these kinds of risks? Because the valve turners themselves acknowledge there are people in their 50s and 60s, they said, you know, older people have less risk serving time in jail or prison. They're all white, and so there are certain privileges, and the law tends to be harsher with minority groups. Look at the comparisons with Standing Rock protesters. What about the high risks that are attached to these actions of civil disobedience and their place in movement work?
There are real risks. It's true. People who are older white people tend to be more leniently treated, but they can certainly be retaliated against precisely because they're, you know, forfeiting their privileges. That has happened. It's so odd on this issue how white men and fossil fuels are becoming conflated by Donald Trump, who embodies strong support for both. So, but it's true, in doing any action at all, and it has always been true, the people who are older know the risks better and have much less to lose than a young person. A young person, it's a bigger gamble. It can be a narrow road into heroism, but can also be a wider road into serious lifetime devolution.
And being labeled a felon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are the legal criteria for the necessity defense? Could you just briefly say, without getting into all the minutiae of the law, like what do these cases have to argue?
Well, it varies from state to state. There, everyone acknowledges some form of necessity defense. Like if you break the speed limit while driving to a hospital because you've got somebody in your car who's bleeding and in danger of death, it's okay. There's a good reason for that.
And the classic example of shoving someone out from a train. But we're talking here about less immediate contingencies, and the more remote the influence or threat, the higher the bar, right?
Yeah, well, you've got to show that there's a serious danger. And some states say it's got to be imminent. Most states do not. That's a controversial requirement. But how imminent? What does imminent mean? Next, you've got to show that you have tried everything else, that there's no legal alternatives. You've tried petitions and other measures. And some areas, some courts require you to say there's no public policy against it, but it's a statewide variance. But there's getting past that hurdle and the judge to a jury is the hard part.
And the advantages of having a jury trial are attached to disadvantages. I mean, juries are manipulated and often emotions prevail.
But Jan, you can present witnesses. You can cross-examine the state.
On the other hand, there is something about rationality and evidence that prevails in the courts. That these cases are riveting in that way. That people really have to have their act together, and have a way of arguing, even though it does rely on emotion.
It's not an abstract dissertation, a jury trial.
Yeah, and with so much at stake, there is an element of political theater, but it's compelling, and with so much of media being dominated by the poorest kind of performance of politics, there is still something about these courtroom scenes and getting a jury trial that's worth fighting for.
Exactly.
So we'll continue to follow the valve turners. It's unfolding in ways that are fascinating, and some victories here and there, some losses, but they're an incredible group of people. And on our website, we have the valve turners website, and where you can follow the legal events, and we will continue to follow their work in solidarity, and I know they are also raising money to continue their struggle, even with pro bono legal lawyers helping. There are all kinds of costs, and
it's very expensive,
to keep
very
these
demanding.
Cases going. Okay, Jan Hawken and Mike Snedeker talking today about the necessity defense and the valve turners cases.